And I'm so delighted to be here with this rectangles of love, as I always say. That's borrowed from a poem by Rumi, which I love. You know, Rumi uttered, please come out of the circle of time and enter the circle of love. Please come out of the circle of time and enter the circle of love. And of course, a heartfelt welcome to those who are attending in person. So the topic today is poetry, humor, and I want to add also teaching stories in the spirituality of Islam. And my goal here is, my aspiration is that maybe by bringing out some insights, some wisdom from the humor, from the teaching stories, from the poetry, maybe some of that will, and I'm quoting Rumi here again, some of that will splash in your heart. Splash in your heart and give you some inspiration, some guidance, because these are all universal teachings. Because today I'm talking not so much about the religion, about spirituality, which is at the heart of every single tradition. And if we focus on spirituality, of course you as Unitarians would know, we would fight and debate much less, wrangle much less. You know, which reminds me of this wonderful poem by Rumi, who, if I remember, he said, what is praised is one. What is praised is one, so the praise is also one. So many jugs being poured into a huge basin. All these religions, all these songs, it's really just one song. The differences are just illusion and vanity. I like that last sentence. The differences are just illusion and vanity. Which reminds me of that story, which is in the monotheistic traditions, in Islam also. The story is that God comes down on earth and reveals certain basic truths to some people. But then the devil comes along and says, let me organize that for you. And that becomes religion. So just be with that story. And realize that all these religions, as far as I'm concerned, are really paths to a shared universal. All these religions are a path to a shared universal. So let me start with Islam. From the beginning, the word Islam literally means surrender. But the question is, what are you surrendering? And the Quran, which is the holy book of Muslims, it says you're surrendering your attachment to your ego. You're surrendering your attachment to your ego so that you can bring a, this is the verse from the Quran, so that you can bring a heart turned in devotion to God. Surrendering in peace, attachment to the ego, so you can bring a heart turned in devotion to God. I'm not saying Muslims follow that. I'm not saying non-Muslims follow that, because this is hard work. To put it mildly, this is inconvenient work. So the Quran suggests in its spirituality that life really begins when one becomes a seeker. Because before we become a seeker, we are in a hypnotic trance, just carrying on, mesmerized, without awareness of the incredible, momentous mystery we are all immersed in. Where did I come from? What am I doing here? Where am I going? You know, our holy books, some say, oh, the answer is all in the holy books. But the holy books don't come with footnotes. And so we fight over the meaning. We have no mission statement. We are in a total state of perplexity, which we don't realize because we are in a hypnotic trance. Ah, something has to open us up. It can be joyous. A baby is born. It's not so much a baby is born. A mother is born. A father is born. Well, that's a momentous moment. The mystery of it. The joy of it. I awaken. It could be, as is very often because we are unmindful, something difficult, a crisis, because we are unmindful. Death of a loved one, divorce, a total downturn in material circumstances. Then suddenly questions arise. What's going on? Why me? But most of all, and this is what the Quran is waiting for, most of all, a cry comes up from within. An anguished cry, I need help, I need help. But I need help from a source greater than human personality. I need help, but from a source greater than human personality or a human institution. This wonderful poet Hafiz, 14th century, something missing in my heart tonight has made my eyes so soft, my voice so tender, my need for God absolutely clear. I wake up. For me, it was the death of my parents. They died within the space of 20 days. They were very closely bonded as a couple. It woke me up. Something missing in my heart tonight has made my eyes so soft, my voice so tender, my need for God absolutely clear. So the question to you is, what woke you up? It doesn't have to be something very sad. It can be a series of events. It doesn't have to be singular. Just take a few seconds. What woke me up and made me a seeker? Because that's when you realize, I really want to become a better human being, more Christ-like, Buddha-like, Elohim-like, Allah-like. I want my life to have meaning. You know, there's a wonderful poet in Asia, from India actually, Tagore, who was the first Asian to win the Nobel Prize, Rabindranath Tagore, who said, you know, I spend my days and nights stringing and unstringing my instruments. I spend my day and night stringing and unstringing my instrument, but the song I came here to sing remains unsung. The song I came here to sing remains unsung. So when I wake up, I engage in what the Quran, the Islamic sages suggest is a divine exchange. I struggle every hour, every day, every week, every month, every year to bring divine attributes in the center of my life and diminish my attachment to my ego traits. My pride, my greed, my jealousy, my uncontrolled anger. It's a constant struggle. And all the sages, they encourage us to really focus on this divine exchange. So Rumi, for example, with this poetry is embedded in my heart. Jamal, where will you find a customer like God? Where will you find a customer like God who pays in gold? Who accepts your counterfeit coins? Who buys your dirty, shabby bag of goods? Takes a few teardrops, and in return, gives you a spiritual spring so delicious, even sugar is jealous of its sweetness. Jamal, where will you find a customer like God who pays in gold, who accepts your counterfeit coins, buys your dirty, shabby bag of goods, takes a few teardrops, and in return gives you a spiritual spring so delicious, even sugar is jealous of its sweetness. For God's sake, Rumi goes on, you know, sell and buy at once. Where will you find a market like this? For one little seed, the entire rose garden. For one weak breath, the divine breath. If this sounds abstract, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he said, it's like this. He said, you know, Jamal, every day you're struggling to make choices because you have free will. Every moment we're struggling because we have free will to make the right choices. We make mistakes, it's okay. We learn from mistakes, but we're struggling. So the Prophet said, Jamal, every day, every hour, you're either ennobling, enriching your soul or diminishing your soul. That's a divine exchange. So just be with that. Am I struggling to make the right choices? It's okay. That's why I'm here. Okay, next topic. Having faith. What does it mean to have faith? It's not just about I accept whatever is told to me. That's hearsay. That's not faith. It doesn't matter who it is who tells me. My parents, my church, my religious authorities, my school teacher. So in Islam, real faith is moving from borrowed certainty to inner knowing. I repeat, it's a lifetime's work to develop faith, moving from borrowed certainty to inner knowing. The Quran says there are three stages. The first stage is hearsay. Second stage is I become aware, I use my eyes literally and metaphorically to witness, to heighten my consciousness. The third stage is an experience. It is my experience that deepens and solidifies my faith in God, in humanity, in life. You see, there's celebration. You follow those stages, there's celebration. That's wonderful, wonderful. And so a wonderful example is the flame of a candle and a moth. The flame of the candle, you might say, is faith. And there's a moth that hears about the flame of the candle. That's hearsay. And then it explores and sees the flame, witnesses it with its eyes. That's a second stage, witnessing. The third stage is the moth comes close to the flame and experiences the glow of presence. That's the third stage. So again, just be with that. What is my faith based on? What is it rooted in? And to remember that if I have faith, it builds trust. And I need to build trust. Trust in God. Trust in you. Because without trust, I cannot be vulnerable. And without vulnerability, there is no real relationship between me and God, between me and you. So is it just enough to say, I trust in God? This is a wonderful true story of the 7th century. An Arab Bedouin was walking towards the mosque to pray, taking his camel with him. And on the way, he met Prophet Muhammad. And he asked the Prophet Muhammad, should I tie my camel to the post? Should I tie the camel to the post or just trust in God? Have faith in God. Just trust in God. And the Prophet Muhammad famously replied, first, tie your camel to the post, then trust in God. So we must do our part. If you do our part, we shall have hope. And by the way, we all need hope. The book that my friend was referring to, Sacred Laughter of the Sufis, it's filled with stories of the mullah, who is a fictional character of the 13th century, and through whom many, many insights are conveyed. So here's a story, a very simple story, of the mullah on the train in India. They all travel by train in India. A lot of people travel. And suddenly he sees the ticket conductor coming. And as he sees the ticket conductor coming, he reaches into the pockets of other people, opens the suitcases of other people, and those other people say, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm looking for my ticket." He says, "Look in your own pocket for the ticket." And the mullah says, "I could do that. I could look in my own pocket, but if I don't find the ticket there, I shall lose all hope." And that's the end of the story. We all need hope. Without hope, life is very difficult. So how can we build hope in times of difficulties, in times of affliction? And the Quran suggests, in times of affliction, remember this very important wisdom. And this is taken from the life of the Prophet Muhammad. Particularly in times of difficulties, afflictions, don't forget two things. According to your capacity, continue with your spiritual practices. Number one. Number two, according to your capacity, continue to be of service to God's creation. According to your capacity. Rumi says, according to your capacity, be a lamp, a lifeboat, or a ladder to others. Be of service. And according to capacity, says Rumi, be in attendance at the divine court. And you'll find that the Quran says, God will provide in you for you in ways you cannot even imagine. Rumi says, in times of affliction, a stretcher will come from grace and help you. In any case, even if I don't get what I want, sometimes what I want is not in my highest interest, but I shall experience sakina, an inner peace, a deep inner peace. Just be with that for a few seconds. I'm looking at the time also and my notes here. You know, my problem is I'm from the East. As I always say, I talk and talk and talk and talk till somebody starts to snore. But I shall be compassionate and watch my time. Okay, moving on. The Quran suggests we've got to do the inner inconvenient work. That's why we are here on planet Earth. If you ask, what is my purpose for being here? We can say many, many things. But if you look at all the different traditions, there are two main points. I'm here to become a more complete human being, more Christ-like, you might say, Allah-like, Buddha-like. And the second part of my reason for being on planet Earth is to be of service to God's creation. So the first part, to be a better human being, the Quran is very clear. I've got to transform my ego from a commanding master into a personal assistant. I've got to transform my ego from a commanding master into a personal assistant. How do you do that? The Prophet Muhammad said two things. Number one, he said, know thyself, and you shall know thy sustainer. Get to know yourself. You're more than your personality. What is your personality? Nothing more than a bundle of conditioned reactions to life's circumstances. But you're more than that. How do you get beyond that? Shine the light of compassionate self-witnessing, and you'll realize you are your personality, but you're also your divine spark, your Christ nature, Buddha nature, Elohim nature, Allah nature. So, know thyself and you shall know thy sustainer. And the second thing the Prophet Muhammad said, die before you die. Die to all that is false within you before you die a physical death. And now here comes the mullah to help us. Remember who the mullah is? That fictional character. Through his stories, we become aware of who we are. So there's one famous story. To become aware of our conditioned patterns of behavior. Blaming this, blaming bad luck, blaming somebody who did this, but forgetting what I have done to create that. The mullah goes to work. Lunchtime, opens his lunch pail box. What does he find? A cheese sandwich. Second day, third day, fourth day, it's always a lousy cheese sandwich. On the 10th day, I'm getting sick and tired of this lousy cheese sandwich. His puzzled co-worker said, Mullah, why don't you ask your wife to make you a different kind of sandwich? I'm not married. Who makes them? I do. Story of our lives. Okay, another one. Excuses. Somebody knocks on the mullah's door. Can I borrow your donkey? That's done in that part of the world. The mullah doesn't want to give the donkey, so he lies. He makes up an excuse. Oh, brother, if only you'd come 5 minutes ago, I just lent it to another neighbor. Unfortunately, just at that time, the donkey in the stable begins to bray. But I hear your donkey. The mullah is caught. And so he pretends to be angry. Who will you believe? Who will you believe? Me or the donkey? And the story goes on and on and on. I'm looking at my notes. Maybe just one more. Because I'm looking at the time also. You know, our slavish dependence on authorities and experts. Our slavish dependence on authorities and experts. So here's a mullah. He's very gravely ill. His wife is crying and lamenting, because the mullah, her husband, is so gravely ill. And now in comes the expert, the allopathic medical doctor, the MD, who examines the mullah at length, turns to the mullah's wife and says, "Oh, honorable wife of the mullah, your husband is no more. His soul has flown to the bosom of God. Only Allah is immortal." But the mullah is not dead. He's feebly saying, "I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive." And what does the wife say? "Quiet, don't argue with the doctor." Our dependence on authorities and experts, forgetting the real expert, the real teacher can be the teacher within myself also. That's why Prophet Muhammad very famously said, I'm not saying Muslims follow that, but Prophet Muhammad said, no matter who the expert is, the religious authority, any other authority who tells you something, first consult your heart. Consult your heart. Okay, talking of heart, the Quran says, not only do you have to transform the ego, you've got to purify the heart and you've got to open the heart. Purify the heart. The Quran says when you have an evil thought, evil behavior, it creates a rust on the heart. And the Prophet Muhammad said, for every rust, there is a polish. And the polish for the rust of the heart is remembrance of God. Meaning, use God's solvents to polish the heart. Patience, graciousness, love, compassion. The Quran suggests, what can you offer God? Everything you have, Jamal, is from God. The only thing you can offer God is a polished heart, so it reflects the face of Allah on the heart. And Rumi says, "Brother Jamal, if you get irritated by every rub, how will the mirror of your heart ever be polished? If you get irritated by every rub, how will the mirror of your heart ever be polished?" The Quran says, it's not just about purifying the heart. You've got to open the heart, which is the most difficult thing to do. Meaning, Jamal, can you embrace your 10,000 joys of life as also your 10,000 sorrows of life? My difficult feelings, my sadness, my anger, my hate. The Quran says all feelings come from God. And sages take that to mean that all feelings are sacred. It doesn't mean I react to it in a way that is negative or harmful, but know that if I have a difficult feeling, call it hate, call it anger, or call it sadness. These are just vibrations coming up for me to acknowledge them, to heal them, and to integrate them. It makes me a more complete human being. These difficult feelings are begging me for me to kiss them. Carl Jung, who studied many Eastern traditions, He wrote, "Would you once in your life have the courage and the grace to kiss the demons and dragons within you?" That is how they turn into a prince or princess. And the very famous saying from Islamic mystics, don't run towards pain and suffering, just don't run away from them. Don't run towards difficult feelings, difficult situations, just don't run away from them. That's a very important statement. Okay, my friends, I better speak faster or reduce my content. So in the next few minutes, the next topic is a very big one, God, or whatever you call that, divinity, spirit. So let me give you one verse on the Quran. It says in the Quran, if all the trees in the universe became pens, and all the seven oceans became ink, and you began to write out the mystery of God, you wouldn't come close to describing a fraction of the fraction of the fraction of God's mysteries. And so Rumi, when he read this poetry, you know, Rumi never wrote, by the way, he would go into a trance and utter. He uttered about the invisible world, about all these debates about God, all our fighting about who is God, what is God. Rumi says, sell your cleverness and buy bewilderment. Sell your cleverness and buy bewilderment. Cleverness might be opinion, judgment. Bewilderment might be naked vision. This is in every tradition. You know, Buddhism, if you study Buddhism, they don't talk about God, but they talk about the invisible world. They say, if you use the mind to understand the invisible world, it's like using a bamboo stick to measure the depth of the ocean. Using a bamboo stick to measure the depth of the ocean. It's not possible. So why do we fight about our definition of God? None of us know. Another verse from the Quran. God is closer to you than your jugular vein. God is closer to you than your jugular vein. Another verse, God is outside of you and God is inside of you. And Prophet Muhammad said, God told the Prophet that famous is called Hadith Qudsi. God said, beloved one, God is telling each one of us, God is saying, beloved one, I cannot be contained in the space of the earth. I cannot be contained in the space of the heavens, but I can be contained in the space of the pure, loving heart. So this part, for Sufis, mystical Muslims, this place, the heart, place of the heart is infinite. The space of the heart is actually infinite, boundless, because the ultimate beloved resides in the innermost chambers of the heart. God is closer to you than your jugular vein. There's a very famous story of this very beloved female sage in Islam, Rabia. That's R-A-B-I-A. It'd be wonderful to Google her. She's a very 8th century, 9th century beloved female saint. She was walking the streets of Basra. She's from Iraq. And she saw this wonderful, famous spiritual teacher giving a lecture outdoors to his adoring students. And he was telling the students, God, spirit is so compassionate. God is so loving. God is so compassionate. All you have to do is knock on God's door. Keep knocking, knocking, knocking on God's door. And one day, the door will open. And Rabia said, or remarked, said, brother, when was the door ever closed? And the teacher stands up and bows to her. And she moves on. Okay, one more verse from the Quran. I won't have time to get into it, but it's a very famous verse, has multiple meanings. The verse says, every so where you turn is the face of Allah. Every so where you turn is the face of Allah. Really? Is my enemy the face of Allah? Yes. I'm angry at my enemy's behavior, which could be unacceptable. I'm not angry at my enemy's being, which is Christ's nature. Take the right action, the sages say. Don't allow yourself to be abused. Protect yourself. Take the right action. But as you take the right action, in your heart, make a discernment between behavior and being. I'm angry at the behavior, unacceptable, but the being is sacred. Just this discernment, differentiation in my mind and heart, as I take the right action, has the power to shift heaven and earth. Okay, my friends, I'm looking at the time. I'll just give it 2 or 3 more minutes and I'll finish. And so I'll just rush over my notes. My next point was prayer. I don't know if you know how Muslims pray. The Islamic prayer is based on imitation of angels. Prophet Muhammad had a vision where he saw angels, and angels were going like this, bowing, prostrating, and mumbling some words. And the Prophet Muhammad, he discerned, they were just praising God and thanking God. But in imitation of angels, Prophet Muhammad discerned that a Muslim prayer must consist of simply praising God and thanking God and using the gift of the body to express this adoration. So Muslims go like this: for now I'm putting the world behind me, I'm in the presence of God, I bow, I'm letting go of my ego, I stand up, that's what remains of me. As I let go of my ego, I prostrate, I'm letting go of my ego, I sit up, that's what remains of me. This is a wonderful famous saying: one prostration of prayer to God liberates you from 1,000 prostrations to your ego. One prostration of prayer to God liberates you from 1,000 prostrations to your ego. Okay, next point, service. You know, the second reason we are on planet Earth, to be of service, to be of service to God's creation. And we have no idea, unless we are engaged in authentic service, about the joy our soul feels in being of authentic service. Again, Tagore: I slept and dreamt life was joy. I awoke and found life was service. I served and lo, service was joy. And you don't have to do grand things to be of service. Prophet Muhammad said, do good deeds according to your capacity. God never tires of giving rewards unless you tire of doing good deeds. The good deeds most loved by God are the ones that are done regularly, no matter how small they are. And the most important point about service is, can I do the service without attachment to the fruits of the service, to the prestige it brings me, the honor it brings me? I'm doing it for the sake of whatever you believe in, Jesus, Allah, Buddha, for a higher cause. I have to mention community. We all need community. A wall standing alone is useless. Add to it other walls, it can support a roof, even a granary. Only when ink joins with a pen can the blank paper say something. Even prophets needed companions. And particularly we need a spiritual circle with whom we can be vulnerable. They can be of comfort to us. We can consult, receive advice, and most important, share spiritual practices so we become more complete, developed human beings. Prophet Muhammad said, your spiritual practices are only as good as those of your closest friends. Your spiritual practices are only as good as those of your closest friends. Therefore, choose your closest friends wisely. And I'll end now for sure with that wonderful wisdom of the Prophet Muhammad, who said, Jamal, when you arrived here from the invisible world, everybody around you was laughing and smiling, but you were crying and weeping. Live such a life that when you are departing from this material world, everybody around you is crying and weeping, but you are laughing and smiling. I wish for myself and for you such a state in our life. Thank you. I'm sorry I went over, but I'm from the East. I can't help myself.